Sweetest friends, this week we have a parasha Vayechi. At the beginning of the parasha, it says, "Vayechi Yaakov beretz Mitzrayim shvas veishana," and Rashi famously says, "Nisu einem leivim shel Yisrael," that at this point the galus is beginning, and the hearts and eyes of the Jewish people of the tribes began to be sealed. So we're going to be talking a little bit about this Rashi. And then from this Rashi, hopefully we're going to get to Inyanei D'Yoma. Inyanei D'Yoma, for those who don't speak Aramaic, are matters pertaining to contemporary issues. And then, hopefully, we're going to continue serving Hashem B'Simcha afterwards. I was once told by somebody that he thinks the reason I sing Ivduas Hashem B'Simcha is because people are so happy when my shiurim are finally over. I made that up. Nobody ever said that to me. Maybe it's true, but nobody ever said that to me. So the Holy Rebbe, the Sfas Emes, in the year Tafresh Nun Ches, explains this Rashi very beautifully. If you want Ruchnias in this world, you want to be a little bit more spiritual, or a lot more spiritual, you get yourself a copy of the Sfas Emes, and you get yourself a good Chavrusa, and you open up your heart, and your life will be changed forever. If you don't want more Ruchnias, then the Sfas Emes isn't for you. So anyway, he writes, Nistamu, their hearts and eyes were sealed. That's why it's a parasha stuma, that normally there are more spaces in between parashios, and this one, it starts right away, because there's no open space in between the last parasha and this parasha. It's a sealed parasha, because the eyes and the hearts of the Jewish people were sealed. So the Holy Rebbe says that the whole galus and the geula depends on the eyes and on the heart. The eyes and hearts were sealed because the galus is beginning. Exile begins when the eyes and the hearts are sealed. And redemption comes when the eyes and the hearts are opened. There's a sefer called the Sefer HaYetzirah, which is attributed to Avram Avinu. And in this sefer, he says that there are two covenants we have with God. In Hebrew, a covenant is a bris. Bris comes from the word bri'at. It's like this new creation. That's what a bris does. And bris is, as the Sfarim say, it comes from the Lashon Hitkashrut. When you have a brit, you're sealed. There are two ways that we seal ourselves. That's what the bris milah is. There are two ways we seal ourselves to God, says the Sefer HaYetzirah, this Kabbalistic book. One of them is through our bris milah, which he calls the bris hama'or of the flesh, of the skin. And the other way we seal ourselves to God is through our tongue. And that's incidentally, the word in Hebrew for the covenant that we make when you're 8 days old is milah. What does the word milah mean? Word. Word. There's the word, there's the covenant of the bris milah, that word. And then there's the word of our mouths, of our lashon. And then he says, this is Bechinas Yehuda and Yosef, which we won't get into, because then I'm scared I'm going to get far afield and not get to what I want to get to. But that's a topic in and of itself. So we have our way of clinging to God through our bris milah. If a Jew doesn't have a bris milah, then he's out of the beyond the pale. And if a Jew doesn't know how to use his language properly, his lashon, then it's also, he's not connecting properly to God. That's why the biggest mitzvahs in the Torah relate to speech, i.e. Talmud Torah. Tefillah, the Gemara says, is Om Beruah Mashal Olam, higher than any other mitzvah. That's speech. Okay? Nidalim, the first thing we do on Kol Nidre is we do Hataras. The first thing we do on Yom Kippur is Kol Nidre, Hataras Nidalim, to show us the power of man's speech. Today talk is cheap, but in the Torah it's not. Every word we say has value. And then the worst sins you can do, person speaks Lashon Hara, he can transgress, it says in the Gemara, in the Holy Chafetz Chaim, 17 lotasei, 17 no-nos, 14 yes-yeses, and 3 curses. Just with Lashon Hara. One of them, nibble pen. It says in the Gemara, somebody says inappropriate words, curses, sexual innuendo. People die for that. That's what the Gemara says, just for a little nibble pet. Now you shot the ball, you missed an open layup, and then all of a sudden the floodgates open, and so for that the Gemara says many, many terrible things happen. Remember last week with Cohen Shlita, we were Zocha, that an angel of God walked into our Beis Medrash. So when I was in high school, he would describe how a boy is shooting a ball, And then the ball is going around the rim, and the nibble pad is flowing, and it's flowing, and it's going around, and the nibble pad is flowing. So anyway, so Rabbi Cohen taught me about nibble pad, how not to speak nibble pad. Okay, so he says that this bris hamor, this covenant we have with our bris milah, and then the bris haloshim with our speech, again, we're connecting to God through our bris milah and through our speech. He says that our bris haloshim, the covenant we have through God, with God through our speech, depends on the heart. And then he quotes a pasuk in Mishlei in the 16th perek, le'adam emarechei lev. Today I was learning this Sfasemis on the bus. So my Sfasemis doesn't have sources. Now they put out a new one with sources. So I wanted to know where this pasuk was exactly. So I called up my daughter at home, and I had to look it up. There's a book called the Concordancia, which has every word in Tanakh, and you look it up. So my daughter told me that it's in chapter Tezayin, pasuk Aleph in Mishlei. Le'adam ma'archei lev, u'mehashem ma'aneh lashon. That where does your speech come from? You have this feeling in your heart that you want to say something, and that's in your heart. It depends on your free choice. And then God gives you the ability to express what you want to say. U'mehashem ma'aneh lashon. So really, where does our power of speech come from, according to the wisest of all men? From our heart. So the speech is the heart, and then the other covenant we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Brit HaMaor, that relates to the eyes. Remember, we're talking about the hearts and the eyes. So the heart is speech, and the eyes is Brit HaMaor, the Bris Mila. Because when we see something inappropriate, so then it has an effect on our Bris Mila. And when we're careful about our Bris Mila, when we're careful about what we see, then we're also being careful about our Bris Mila. That's why if you read Chassidus Sfarim, and they talk about Shmiras HaBris, you know, they're not talking about, you know, when you play hockey, so you don't want the hockey puck to hit. That's not Shmiras HaBris. Shmiras HaBris is you watch your eyes. Watching your eyes is Shmiras HaBris. Because we know that our eyes have an effect on our Bris, and that's what we have to be very careful about. That's Shmiras HaBris. So when Rashi says their eyes and hearts were sealed, that corresponds to the two covenants we have with God. The heart is speech, the covenant of speech, because you speak what you're feeling. And the eyes is the bris milah, that they're careful about their eyes. The galus and the geula both depend on these two areas, the hearts and the eyes. And that's why it says in the pasuk, V'lo sasuru acharei levavchem v'acharei nechem. Don't go after your hearts and your eyes. And then what does it say at the end of that section? Ani Hashem Elokechem Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim. When you guard your heart and your eyes, your hearts and your eyes, you go out of Egypt. Meaning, when you're careful about your speech and about what you see, you have the geula. When you don't, you're in galus. And that's incidentally why, when we left Egypt, we had two mitzvahs. What were the two mitzvahs given to the Jewish people? Korban Pesach and Bris Mila. Those were the two. It says in Chazal, they were given before, they were given, Moshe Rabbeinu was given Kiddush HaChodesh. But it says the Jewish people were empty of mitzvahs, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give them two mitzvahs before they left, so they were given Korban Pesach and Bris Mila. So Bris Mila corresponds to, obviously, the Bris HaMaor. They had to have a Bris Mila, otherwise you can't leave Egypt. And the Korban Pesach, so what's the major theme of Pesach? Speech. Kol Amarbe, L'saper, B'Yitzias Mitzrayim, Harezim Meshubach. You gotta talk a lot on Lil Pesach, and even the word Pesach is composed of two words. Which two words? Pesach, which means the mouth speaks. So before we left Egypt, God said, I want you guys to watch your bris milas and your speech, and now you can leave Egypt. If you don't, if you're not careful about what you say, and you're not careful about your eyes, so that is the galus. And that's why we say, don't go after your hearts and after your eyes, and then we say, I am God who took you out of Egypt. Because not going after your hearts and eyes, we say this every day, maybe we don't think about it, that is the geula. And then the Sfasemis concludes, Ki habris hu es kashrus. Covenant means you're connecting. Ukefi mashenimtza zeh es kashrus, to the extent that you're connected to God, nasim b'nei cholim, you become free. V'kasher nistam zeh hakoach, but when this ability to be connected to God is sealed off, that's galus. The whole idea of galus. Galus means exile. It comes from the word ligalot. What does ligalot mean? To reveal. Because in exile, God is hiding. And our job in the exile is to reveal God. And that's why the geula, ga'al, redemption, is gimel aleph lamed. because you have the Gimel and the Lamed, which is revealing, and the Aleph is the name of God that symbolizes God, because God is called in Chazal Alufo Shel Olam, you revealed God, that's the Geula. So Galus is your sealed off from God, and the Geula is now God is revealed to you. That's all the Geula is. And that's why, it's interesting, it says in the Torah, Umaltem, it talks about circumcising two things. It talks about circumcising the Bris Milah, and it also talks about Umaltem as Olas Levavchem. You got five for that. Umaltem as Olas Levavchem, circumcise your hearts. And what's that pasuk talking about? When we're redeemed. Redeeming means God circumcises our hearts, which means our ability to speak. We go to Har Sinai, and when we get to Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us the Torah. We get the Torah, and then we have a mitzvah for all the generations to remember Matan Torah. So you know, it's interesting, if you look in the language of the Ramban, I think it's the Ramban with Moshe Ben Nachman, he says, you know what Har Sinai is about? The mitzvah is, our eyes and our hearts, it's either Ramban or the Rambam, I don't remember, one of the two, our eyes and our hearts always have to be at Har Sinai. What does it mean, our eyes and our hearts always have to be at Har Sinai? It means that everything we see in life should be through the prism of Torah, and everything we feel should also be through the prism of Torah, should be Torahic. That's our hearts, again, we're focusing here on the hearts and the eyes, and that's the Geula. And in fact, when they got the Torah, they were never supposed to die, and they were supposed to come into Eretz Yisrael, Mashiach was supposed to come. But it didn't work out that way. But that's the mitzvah of remembering Har Sinai, is again, the eyes and the hearts. Now, when Chazal, if you look in the Gemara in Brachos, they make another drasha. The drasha is, V'losasu achle levavchem achle neichem. Don't go after your hearts and after your eyes. They say, achle levavchem is minus, heresy. Avodah Zarah. Achle neichem, what's going after your eyes? Znus. Sexual immorality. What's the connection between the two? The connection is obvious. Well, first of all, your eyes is what you see. That's immorality. We go after what we see, what looks good. And then our hearts is, you know, we have this feeling that we want to go after this foreign religion, so we go after it. That's the hearts and the eyes. But they're always connected. Why are they connected? Very simply. Because when one wants to have znus, what do? They serve Avodah Zarah. They just stop believing. The way not to believe, the way to enjoy yourself in life, if anyone wants some good enjoy yourself advice, is just say that the Torah isn't true, and then you can do whatever you want. But the moment it's true, you can't do it. Now you're limited. Now there are rules. But the second you just say it's not true, I remember once, a year or two ago, there was somebody who once went to this yeshiva who was writing very terrible things on the internet. So I didn't know who he was, because he was anonymous, as many people are. And so I wrote him an email, and I said, you know, this is really forbidden what you're doing. It's terrible. It's terrible. You're a religious boy. How can you write? So what he started saying was, it was terrible Lashon Hara. So I said, you know, everybody believes that Lashon Hara is a bad thing. I mean, every Jew, right? So how can you? So you know what his answer was? He gave me a whole answer about how really the rabbis made up Lashon Hara. And really, we don't have to listen to the rabbis. And I wrote it back and I said, my sweet friend, first you're doing Averas and then you're denying the authenticity of the Torah. But of course, because if you believe in the Torah, then you can't do the Averas anymore. So, Sesuach, Levach, Levach, go together. First you say, it's not true, and then you can go after your eyes. And then you have a justification for going after your eyes. That's the below, Sesuach, Levach, Levach, Levach. So, just as an aside, just for a moment to explain how it relates to Yehuda and Yosef, we know that Yosef's mitzvah was tzaddik. Tzaddik yisod olam. What's a tzaddik? A tzaddik, Chazal say, is somebody who has a test of sexual temptation and overcomes the test. That is Yosef. What's Yehuda? Yehuda is somebody who, hodah, Yehuda admitted. So Yosef fixed the bris milah, and Yehuda fixed the speech, and these are the two Mashiachs. We know you have Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. So it could be that that's what the Sfas Emes meant, where he said that's Yosef and Yehuda. It's interesting that I got a phone call today. I got a phone call yesterday. Yesterday the phone call was from Rav Korn, and he left a message, and he said, that I'm speaking tonight. That was the message. Okay, so I was thinking what I should say. You know, it's Parshas Vayechi. So I had ideas. I didn't have ideas. And then I got a phone call today. I got a message today. And it was written, my wife is a faithful secretary. She records my messages. So I got a message, and it said that you got a call from the Rosh Yeshiva secretary. And she said, you should speak about how terrible it is to go to New Year's parties. I look at the piece of paper, and I say, I don't even understand what this paper is talking about. What do you mean? I should speak? I should get up? Listen. If I was in a secular college in America, you know, and maybe there were a few boys and girls who once went to a yeshiva, maybe they're having a party, and I have to tell them, you know, Rabbosai and Gvirotai and Rabotai. That's what they say. Gvira in Hebrew is a woman, and Rabotai is a man. So I say Gvirotai and Rabotai, men and ladies and gentlemen, it's just not appropriate behavior. I know all your friends are going to parties, but, you know, this is really not the way of the Jews. But in Netiv Aryeh, opposite the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the middle of Teves, we went through Elul and Rav Shlomo and Rav Eitan Katz and Rosh Hashanah and Rav Yaakov Katz and Yom Kippur, and just walking around everywhere you go, you see all the Roma cats, right? You just from cats to cats, all the kedusha, and you went to Maris HaMachpelah and Kever Rachel. You sat there all the 12 o'clock in the morning. And all the learning and all the Rabbeim and Rav Yol's Chug and Rav Ami's Mishnah Brura Chabura and Rav Amos's, you know, the course of the year. After all of that, somebody has to get up. Maybe that's why they wanted me this week, because they know, like, I'm the only crazy one, so I'll get up and speak about it. I can do one. I said, after all that, I have to get up. Shalei Chaliyah. And if it's true, then I'm in the wrong place. So I was a brave man. I called Rav Korn up, and I said, no, I'm not speaking about it. Get somebody else. I said, whenever I say something controversial, I would say it in the name of Rav Hirshhorn. You can quote me, but just don't quote it in my name. Quote it in his name. Get Rav Hirshhorn to speak. Get Rav Thaler to speak. Get Rav this. Baruch Hashem, the yeshiva doesn't lack for Rabbeim. I think sometimes we have a larger staff than we have a student body. Yeah, if you just count the amount of people walking in here every day. The other night I was trying to hang up my hat. There was not one place to hang up my hat in this yeshiva. Can you believe that? In this yeshiva. And I'm saying the guys aren't wearing hats. That just means there are a lot of guys walking into this building with hats. She said, I'm not doing it. It can't be. So Rav Korn said to me, okay, so speak about how it can't be. He said, speak about how it can't be. A person after all this. So I said, okay. He said, no, you have to, you know, I don't like to say no. I'm also a little bit afraid to say no. So I just said, all right. And then he called me back a few minutes later. And he said, oh, what are you doing? Yeah, you know, what are you doing? So he says, yeah, I just spoke to some of the guys in the shir, and they told me that, yeah, some people are talking about going to New Year's parties tonight. So I said, okay. I couldn't believe it. So what am I supposed to say? So I thought I would do the old Shulchan Aruch says it's usher. Okay. Whoa! What shimon, Rabbi? So it says in the Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to have parties with goyim. But if you have to tell somebody, then I didn't think that argument would be a convincing one. It says in the Gemara, that's not going to be convincing either. But b'chalzot, it says that why in the time of Achashverosh were the Jews supposed to be killed? We were done. We were finished. It says in the Medrash, there was a decree, we're called an Am Nivra. You know the story in the Gemara, that there was a rabbi, it's a famous Gemara, that one rabbi was drunk, come Rabbah, the Shachtei Reb Zera. Rabbah got up and he slaughtered Reb Zera. Not slaughtered like the Mets beat the Phillies 12-1. Right, we're talking about a real slaughter. We're talking about a real slaughter. He slaughtered him. And then he died in flame and he had Tchias HaMesim. That's what it says in the Gemara. The Maharsha says it's not Kepshuto, it's not to be understood in the simple way. Seder, some people do understand it simply. But not that the Maharshal didn't think that the rabbis could be Mechaya Mason, but that was what he said on that Gemara. So, the Svarim HaKadoshim explain why specifically on Purim did he die and come back to life. Because Purim is the day of Tchiyas HaMesim. Purim, there was a decree in Shemaim that the Jews were supposed to die, and then we had new life. So Purim is the day to get new life. That's Purim. So it says, why was we supposed to die on Purim? What did the Jews do that was so rotten? What sin could they have done? So you know what the Gemara's answer is? The Gemara's answer is, Shenenu Misudaso Shel Oso HaRasha. In English, they partied with the Goyim. That's all they did. It didn't say the food wasn't kosher. All it said was that they were Gentiles. There was Achashverosh. And he was having a party. And they joined that party. And the Gemara fills us into more information. The Gemara says, what was the party? It was a party. They saw the Beis HaMikdash wasn't going to be rebuilt. Because they said it was going to be 70 years. So they took the Kelim from the Beis HaMikdash. They took the vessels. And they partied. No, no more Beis HaMikdash. And the Jews took part in that party. They were invited and they came and they danced and they enjoyed and they drank. You know it was kosher. In other words, the Gemara is saying they were supposed to die because they partied. And then another Gemara says, oh, and that party was celebrated. But the Gemara doesn't say it was because they were celebrating the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that it wasn't going to be rebuilt. It just says they enjoyed Achashverosh's party. Where in the Torah does it say, of the 613 commandments, that you're not allowed to join in the parties of Gentiles? I'll tell you right now, you don't have to go through if you don't know what the Eitan is teaching the boys a song to remember all 613. Okay? You don't have to know them. It doesn't. It's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. There's a derabbanan, but you know there are a lot of derabbanans. You know what I mean? You also have to wash and feel sidayim before you eat wet fruit. So, not the end of the world. I know people who are good people who don't. I'm not saying you shouldn't, you should. But there are other derabbanans. There are other, you should put on your right shoe and then your left shoe. It's also in the Mishnah Berurah. But it's not the end of the world. I'm not in any way belittling the importance of putting on your shoes in the right order. It reminds you that there's a God when you're putting on your shoes. I think it's a very nice thing to do. But it's not the end of the world. But here you have something that's like this little derabbanan, or a derabbanan, and it says that because of this rabbinic law, all of the Jewish people are supposed to be wiped out. So I was walking today through Shaar Yafo, and it used to be that I would walk straight and I'd get through there pretty quickly. But now they have this Arab conspiracy to stop traffic. So everywhere you go in Jerusalem, you'll find these Arab guys who are building and doing construction and putting up fences with arrows and telling you not to walk here, not to walk there. So everything just takes a lot longer. So today I was like trying to make my way. I was going up to Rehov Yafo. And apparently I was going in the wrong direction. I was going where I've been going for the last 20 or so years. And all of a sudden I heard an Arab. I assume that he didn't know Hebrew or English because I'll tell you what he said to me. He said, oh, oh, oh! That's what he said. That's what he said. That was the high Lishna. That was the exact lesson. Oh, oh! So I was like, I think that means I should walk over there. Have a nice day, sir. So, I curtsied to him. You know, I go like this. Okay. So I was walking through Shaar Yafo, and I was thinking to myself, Mako Kakurabaze! They were enjoying the party. What's wrong? Why does the Torah not want us to have a good time? Why is the Torah always getting in the way? Enjoy, have fun. The food will be kosher. I'll wear my tzitzis with tcheles. You know, I'll be a good firm Jew and I'll enjoy myself a little bit. There'll be music. And you know what? Chazal even say it was even separate. The girls were in the other building. Okay, they brought them out. So look at them. They were talking about them, the Gemara told us, but at the end of the day, so we'll hang out with some Persians. The Gemara says Persians are hairy. So, hang out with some hairy Persians. So, not making fun of them, but that's what the Gemara says. And we'll enjoy the party. What's so bad? So now I'll explain what's so bad. What's so terrible is that if you party with Goyim, then at that moment, you cease to be Jewish. It's not that you're doing one little Isser. It's that you're now, with this party, you're being completely absorbed into their culture. There was a great mashgiach in the mirror. His name was Rav Yeruchim Levavitz. And he was Rav Aryeh Bina's Rebbe. So he's really the grandfather of this yeshiva. So he says in one of his articles, he's a book called Das Chochmah Musar, one of the classical Musar Sfarim of the last few generations. He says the one theme that goes throughout the entire Tanakh is don't be like Goyim. That's it. It's one, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, Ruchu Kusein, Lo Seilechu, right?
But you're not always necessarily, you know, being over in that aveira of going in the ways of the Goyim. But he says that is the underlying theme of the Torah. That what? That Jews are different. And being different means you don't party with them. Because the moment you start partying with them, you're not doing one little aveira or even one big aveira. You stop being Jewish. So God said, wait a second. If you're not Jewish anymore, then what do I need you guys for? And that's why Chazal saying this, we're supposed to be wiped out because we're not Jews anymore. We're Goyim. Goyim Hashem has enough. There's 6 billion. He doesn't need any more. Nothing against them. He created them. They're here. It's terrific. But he wants one nation to be different. That's our goal. The goal of a Jewish person in this world, we're supposed to be different. And we forget that. And the idea of partying with them means we don't want to be different. And I was sitting before, I was reading this book. You know, I haven't been to Europe, to any of the tours yet, to Eastern Europe. So I like to read. Rabbi Kron wrote a book, Traveling with the Maggid. And he tells a story here. I'll read. It was July 29th, 1941, the fifth day of Av, when the Nazis rounded up the Jews of Kelm under the watchful eyes of the Lithuanian neighbors, who did nothing but stare with hate and glee. No Jew had any doubt about what lay ahead. With guns and bayonets pointed at them from every angle, there was no escape. It's a terrible way to ruin the holiday cheer over here in Jerusalem. It's almost New Year, the bull's about to come down. It was not a matter, it's almost 12 o'clock. It was not a matter if they would be killed, but when they would be killed. The leaders of the Talmud Torah were ordered to lead the march. The Mashkiach, Rabbi Daniel Mashkovitz, was in front with his brother-in-law, Rav Gershon Miadnik, who was ordered to carry a Sefer Torah, and the Rav of the town, Rabbi Kalman Reinishovitz, walked alongside them. The Kelmer Jews following behind, Kelmer's in Russia, following behind, walked slowly, quietly, downtrodden along the roads of the town. But then someone started singing. One by one, others joined as they sang with increasing gusto and defiance the very songs they sang on the most joyous day of the year. Simchas Torah. Ashreinu matov chelkeinu u'manayim gorelenu. We are fortunate. How good is our portion, how pleasant our lot, how beautiful our heritage. The Nazi soldiers couldn't believe it. The Lithuanian peasants couldn't understand it. The song reverberated through the town as incredulous onlookers could not fathom what they were witnessing. The Nazis pushed and shoved the Jews along, but they were not fazed. They began another song. Atavich ha'atanu mikol ha'amim. You have chosen us from all the peoples. And the mood shifted as the Jews of Kelm began connecting to their Creator with a melody that is universally chanted on the holiest day of Yom Kippur, on the holiest day of the year, Yom Kippur. It was the tune that introduces the service of the high priest in the Holy of Holies. Aleinu l'shabeach l'adon ha'kol. It is our duty to praise the Master of all, Shelo asanu kegoyei ha'aretzos, for he has not made us like the nations of the world. As they approached the outskirts of town, the Jews of Kelm knew that for them this was Yom Kippur, a time for sacrifice, a time for service, a time to go to their Akedah for a reason known only to their Creator. When everybody reached the forest, they were ordered to stop walking. The Nazis made them dig graves in the hardened soil. Many cried as they realized they were digging their own or their friend's grave. Rabbi Daniel Mashovitz, I think I mispronounced it earlier, approached the Nazi soldier and asked if he could address his people one more time. Permission was granted. Rabbi Daniel understood the dire circumstances. His words had to be reassuring, they had to be calm, and they had to give strength to the multitudes that stood before him. Can we possibly imagine a more difficult task? A survivor who was able to escape from one of the pits into which the victims fell retold that final shmooze given in Kelm. And it's written in a book called, it's written, quotes, Day of the Dibor, July 31st, 2003. I think it's a website. Rabbi Daniel began by talking of the schus of giving one's life for Kiddush Hashem. He cited the Asar Arugei Malchus, the 10 martyrs, who were taken from this world by the Roman murderers as an atonement for the rest of the world. The world has no schusim. The 10 martyrs were taken so that the rest of the world could live, exclaimed Rav Daniel. He was preparing them to accept that they, the noble Jews of Kelm, were about to be taken from this world for the same purpose. The world was corrupt and depraved. Humanity had stooped to such a low level that it deserved to be eradicated. It is the same today, he said. We are the proud martyrs who will save others. We are being sacrificed so that our brothers and sisters the world over shall live. We are about to lose our lives. All of us here in Kelm will be an atonement for the rest of the world. Let our hearts be pure, let our minds be unsoiled. And with that he stepped back and was murdered along with the rest of the martyrs of Kelm. Rav Gershom Miadnik, who was holding a Sefer Torah, was shot next. The Torah that he held and the Torah that he was fell together in a mass grave together evermore. With methodical brutality, everybody was shot. The community of Kelm was gone.
Interesting that there was once somebody once went to Kelm and he wanted to see what type of Musar they lived. Well, they heard there was Musar in Kelm. So he wanted to know what Musar was. So he came one Shabbos and the rabbi there gave a shmooze to the boys about their boots. In Kelm, they used to emphasize the importance of having order, having Seder. They said that if you're an orderly person, then you'll be able to serve Hashem. And if you're not orderly, if you're all scatterbrained, you never know where anything is, and you never keep to a schedule, and you're always late, and you're this, so you can't properly serve Hashem. So they were very careful in Kelm that everything should be in the right place. There's a story in Kelm that somebody once left an umbrella there, and nobody touched it for 13 years. Right? When they would daven, everybody would daven together at the same pace, and they stood silently for Shemoneh Esrei. It took an hour, Shemoneh Esrei. And everybody would just stand there silently, and everything was done exactly on time. That was Kelm. There's a whole Musar school called Kelm, which was, the teacher was Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelm. They have his farm downstairs. You can learn them. That was Kelm. So one Shalashudis, this newspaper reporter, non-firm newspaper reporter, came to the yeshiva, and he wanted to hear what's Musar about. So they dimmed the lights, and he started saying, "Gentlemen, I see that where you keep your boots, some of the boots were just thrown there, and they weren't put in the right place." And he starts using a tune that you'd use at a funeral for the boots. So afterwards, this secular newspaper reporter, he wanted to make fun of the yeshiva. So he entitled the article, "A Eulogy for Boots." Because he used the tune you'd use for a eulogy. And he was talking about boots. So a eulogy for boots. But what he didn't understand, what the Kelmers understood, was that if you're careful about your boots, then when it comes time to die, that this is the way you're going to die. And that's exactly how they did. They went out there, and they were in control of themselves, and he was able to speak, and he was able to gather his thoughts, and they were able to gather their thoughts and be in control, and then they died like heroes. That's just as an aside. But why did I read that story to you? I read that story to you because it shows you the way a Jew thinks. A Jew is not angry he's a Jew because he's killed by the Nazis. A Jew says, "I am so happy I'm Jewish. Look, I would never kill an innocent person. I wouldn't even hurt an innocent person. I wouldn't even want to hurt somebody's feelings. And I'm proud to be Jewish." And they were saying, "Thank God we're not like the Goyim." They're proud to be Jewish because we don't want to be like them. They should look at us and they should say, "Oh wow, look at the Jews. They brought morality to the world. They brought a day of rest to the world. They brought this concept of charity and kindness. These were Jewish inventions. The Christians hijacked it a little bit, and the other people hijacked it in Western culture, but it's all based in America. They call it Judeo-Christian values. There's no such thing as Judeo-Christian values. There's only Jewish values. Some of them Christianity adopted, and some Christian ideals are just stupid, like turning the other cheek and that holy people don't get married. But all of the positive ideals and values of Western culture are taken from the Torah, and we have to be proud of that. And then when they have their parties, because now you're going to change the date, because until now you wrote 2009, and now you're going to write 2010. Wow! So everybody gathers together and they drink and they dance. And I used to watch, you know, when the Big Apple would fall, and they would say 10, 9, 8. That was so exciting. What's going to happen? It's going to be 12 o'clock at night. Wow! My watch is going to reach 12. And then when I sign a check, I'm not going to sign 2009. I'm going to sign 2010. 2-1. And then every guy, the hormones start raging. "Let me kiss a woman." And then everyone's ready to kiss somebody. Wow! And then they dance through the night and everybody's off the next day and you have nothing to worry about. And then the next day you get up, you sleep late, you have a little bit of a hangover, you get up at 12:30 in the afternoon, 1 o'clock. And then all of a sudden, it's the Rose Bowl! The Rose Bowl! They're playing football! Baruch Hashem! This is Me'ein Olam Haba! And then you watch them and he sees who's going to be number one, the AP, the UPI. What?
Why would we want to be a part of them? What is there to them? Why is that appealing to the Jewish people? That's my question to you. Why would we want to be a part of this nonsense? And then we have our own Rosh Hashanah. What is our own Rosh Hashanah? Our own Rosh Hashanah. You sit in shul. You say, Hashem, you're the Melech. We just want to be good, and we want to bring light, and we want everybody to serve you together. And we have to ask ourselves, we make a cheshbon and nefesh, what can we do better? How can we improve? That's what we're bringing to the world. And all the problems we see in the Jewish people today, and there are a lot of problems, are all because we're like them. You start being like them, you start partying with them, and then you adopt their values. And then your Einayim go after them, and then your Lev goes after them, and then all of a sudden you change because you look and you see and something looks attractive, and then you change the way you think, and then you start denying the Torah. And that's what people do. People in America, a lot of people, they just laugh at the whole thing. You believe in those fairy tales. I'm not talking about non-religious Jews. I'm talking about people who keep Shabbos, and they send their kids to yeshivas, and they buy fancy tefillin, and they make nice bar mitzvahs, and you believe in those fairy tales. You really think God is watching over the world. You really think God cares. And that's the way they think. And then once you have the lack of belief, the lev, right? The los esur acharei levavchem, which Chazal say means not going after your heart, which means not going after heresy. Then your eyes, and then everything falls. And then you have all the princes and all the immorality. You guys probably don't know. But in America, in a certain yeshiva, there's some people who have a problem. They have a very serious problem. And I have a lot of compassion for people with those problems. A lot. I cry for them. I just cried a few minutes ago, so you see that I can cry. So I can't say I've ever literally cried, but in my heart, I feel a lot of compassion for them. It's hard for them. But you know what? Life is hard. Life is battles, and different people are given different battles. Different people. I want to be a professional singer, and I almost was. I almost made it. All I needed was a good voice. That was the one thing I lacked. If I just would have been musical, I could have been a professional musician. Seder. I'm not saying it's the hardest battle. There are battles. Everybody has battles. Some people have ADD, and some people have physical ailments. Everybody has battles. And some people have, for whatever reason, whether it's nature or nurture, they have certain problems. And they have to deal, and it's very painful for them because they're living in a community where it's not acceptable to be this way. So there are two ways of going about it. There's the Torah way, which is, you go to somebody close to you, somebody you can confide in, and you say, I have this problem, and I want to work through it, and I know it's not right, because God said it's disgusting. So if God said it's disgusting, and we're the Jewish people, it's disgusting. Or, you can go the Goyish way, and you can say, hey, this is what I want to do, so it must be okay. And then, you make a big symposium, and you get people to start feeling bad for you, and I wasn't there, but I heard from somebody who read the transcript who wasn't there either, but in the transcript it said that two people are actually talking about practicing this abomination. And then it becomes okay. And then 700 people come, just before I was complaining to Rav Korn. I said, how come, if I want to give a shiur in Minchas Chinuch, maybe I'll get one person, and that's only my daughter, and only because she's really good to me. Really good. My daughter will do anything. My daughter loves me so much, I'm like an only father to her. Hashem. We have a traditional family. Yes, only one father. Hashem. Right? But, if I get up, and I start talking about perversions in society, that's going to be a lot more interesting. You put up a sign before, you're going to get a bigger crowd. That's the world we... People like it. They want to talk about it. They want to hear about it. But that's not holy. It's not holy. Holy in Judaism means hidden. That's the definition of holiness. What's the holiest place in the world? The Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was the most hidden. God is the holiest, and you can't see him, he's hidden. Your neshama is holy, and it's hidden. And what's happening in our society, I don't even know, what I really want to do, the Rambam says, when you can't live in society, you should just go to a place where you can live, and if you can't be anywhere because everything is so corrupt, then go right away to a desert. And the Rambam says, you know when things were really corrupt, the Rambam says? In my time. 800 years ago, can you imagine what life things were like? And, the internet is only 750 years old, right? So 800 years ago, when the Rambam was around, things weren't so bad compared to today. If the Rambam was alive, I don't know what type of world we're living in. I don't know. I hear stories sometimes. People tell me, I can't believe it. I would tell you, there's an Aron Kodesh there. I can't believe it. And people begin to think it's normal. Because when it happens enough, you say, yeah, it's such a big deal. And all the distortions and all the perversions and all the sickest things. And then it just becomes normal until the next thing is they draw the line there. And then that becomes normal. So what's the goal of yeshiva? The goal of yeshiva is, is you want to get the ayin and the lev. You want to do what's right, and you want to do what's holy. Now, it happens to be, I'm not zelcha to know everybody in this room so well. Some of you I'm zelcha to know better, and I wish I knew everybody very, very well. But I'm going to make the following assessment. The assessment is there are a good number of people in this world, in this room, who want to do what's good and who want to be holy. That's my assessment of what I know about the people in this room. Now, being good and holy is a test, and it's a struggle, because you're in a world where people don't want to be good and holy. They want to talk about sick things, they want to talk about perversions. You know, somebody sent me an email the other day about, you know, because the boy I'm close with, so he said, can you please react to this? Whenever somebody says, can I please get your reaction to this? I know it's not going to be like, you know, a new Reb Chaim, they just found an old manuscript, you know, what he thinks about some Rambam in Hilchos, you know, B'yas HaMikdash, you know, in Paragimel. You know, it's going to be something, but he said, tell me, oh, like, you know, some bad thing that a rabbi did. You know, sick thing a rabbi did, and somebody else stole, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Why are people focused on this all day long? I'm not saying that I'm not justifying any behavior. Any behavior is sick. But people talk about it, and then, oh, you read about it, and then you think about it, and then it becomes more and more and more common. It's not like that. Most rabbis are very good people. I've known in my life, I haven't personally in my life, I've never met a rabbi who I knew to. Besides the fact, almost every rabbi I've ever met has not been a child molester, has been very honest, has been shomer einayim. Normal. Most people I know want to marry a woman. 99% of all boys, 99.3% of all boys want to marry. That is completely normal behavior, Baruch Hashem. There are a small amount that don't, but not everything has to be discussed. That's the opposite of Judaism, and it's the opposite of tznius. And we are in this world to be holy, and we're here to spread holiness. And if there's a problem, it should never, chas v'shalom, be swept under the carpet. But it also doesn't have to be in every newspaper, and in every blog, and in every website, and everybody's talking about all the sick things. And that's the world we live in. So it's not up to me, because I'm only one little person, I'm about 5'10", and about 96 pounds after dinner. That was a joke. Ha! Okay? So I'll stand sideways, you won't be able to see me. There's very little I can do. But Baruch Hashem, there are a nice number, a few minyanim of future tzaddikim in this room, and I'm now bequeathing to you this very important task, and that is try to spread holiness in the world. Try to spread kedusha, try to spread good things, try to spread values, and to remember what the diametrical opposite is. New Year's parties, you know, football games, all this crazy stuff. I'm not saying you guys playing football, I want you to play football, I want you to exercise, I want you to have fun. I'm talking about being involved in the subculture. I call it a sub, it's not even culture, it's just the worst, it's just pure, it's all about the body, and it's all about, it's either silliness or it's lewd. All this lewdness in society, and on television, and on DVDs, and on all these things, why do you guys want it? Be happy you're Jewish! I'm so proud, it says in the Sfarim, you have to have a little bit of gaiva, a little bit of haughtiness. I have a little bit of haughtiness. I'm glad I don't watch DVDs. I don't watch TVs. People tell me names of actors and singers. I don't even want to know. Why should it interest me? These people are so shallow. And they're living lives of such... What do you think of athletes? I remember when I was a kid, I was a Mets fan. I was a crazy Mets fan. I remember from the time I was like 6 until the time I was like 17, 18. I would always think about the Mets, and I would talk about the Mets, and I would make trades in my mind at night. I would say, if we just get there, we get a relief pitcher, this, that. And then finally, because of all, I don't know if it's completely due to all of my, brilliant, maneuverings, the Mets won the World Series. Finally, after all those years. So they won. And then afterwards, they came out about it, and they were my heroes! And I put them on my wall, and I danced about them, and I spoke about them, and I was so excited. And then afterwards, they wrote a book. Somebody wrote a book. I didn't read it, because somebody told me there's a lot of nibble pen there, and a lot of other things I wouldn't want to read. But somebody told me, maybe some of you have read. They talked about what type of people they were. What type of people? It's not Lashon Hara, because it's... You're not chayv Lashon Hara about such people. The 1986 Mets. What type of people were they? They were into every aveira in the Torah. Every sick, disgusting thing you can think of. Just craziness. With the drugs, and with the women, and with the drinking, and with all the crazy. They were the low, the dregs of society. And they were my heroes. They were my heroes. So you know what? I don't need such heroes. And you guys don't need... You don't need such heroes. What do you need them for? What are the dregs of society? The greatest players that you see, the greatest... I don't want to start mentioning names. They cheat on their wives, and they beat their wives, and they beat on the girl they're cheating on, and they steal, and they have a baby from this one, and a baby from that one. I said, what do you need that? You have Rav Moshe Feinstein, and you have the Chofetz Chaim, and you have the Vilna Gaon, and you have the Rambam, and you have Ravina and Rav Ashi and Hillel, and you have Rabbi Akiva, and you have Moshe Rabbeinu. What do you need these filthy people for? What do you need them? And then if we be examples, then the world will follow our example. It's not what's happening. It's just the opposite. The Jewish world, the front world, they're following them, and they're all on the internet, and they're all with the filth, and then we become like them, and then everybody, look, they put us on the front page. They don't care if some, you know, some guy does it. It's not so interesting. The moment the guy is a yarmulke, and it's mahudra, if he has a beard, and he does something sick, then he's on the cover of the New York Times. It's a yomtiv for everybody. Look at that! Look at that! And then even for the from Jews, oh, you have something to talk about now on Shabbos morning. Everybody, oh, I know him, I know her, I knew it all along. Da, da, da. Like, we don't need that. We don't need that. We don't want to be part of the culture. So my job, sweetest friends, was not to tell you not to go to New Year's parties, because it's completely unthinkable to me and inconceivable that anybody would do that. My job is to inspire everybody here, I hope, and myself, that we should always serve Hashem. I don't know.